Hi, listeners. This is a quick thank you for listening and for your ongoing support. If you're enjoying the program, please consider clicking the follow or subscribe button if you haven't done so already. It really helps us out. There's no better way to support us than doing that or sharing the show with a friend, colleague, family member, or any new or expecting parent in your life. It's totally appreciated. On with the show. Hi, I'm Sarah Trott, and welcome to the Fourth Trimester Podcast. I'm a new mama, and this podcast is all about postpartum care for the first few months following birth, the time period also known as the fourth trimester. My postpartum doula, Esther Gallagher, is my co-host. She's a mother, grandmother, perinatal educator, birth and postpartum care provider. Fourth trimester care, our topic, is about the practical, emotional, and social support parents and baby require. And importantly, it helps set the tone for the continuing journey of parenting. Hi, this is Sarah Trott. Welcome back to the Fourth Trimester Podcast. I'm here with a special guest today, Shoshana Bennett. And I will give you a little intro on her in just a moment. But before I do, I wanted to remind everyone listening that we have a website, which is fourthtrimesterpodcast.com. And anyone interested in signing up for our newsletter to get exclusive information and news on whenever we publish a new episode, you can go to our website and sign up there. You can also sign up to sponsor our program. We have links on our site, or you can go directly through patreon.com and sponsor us there. So our guest today is Shoshana Bennett, and she has had her own experiences with postpartum illness. So I'm going to ask her about that right away. But she's helped pioneer the field of maternal health here in the U.S. We're so excited to have her. She has founded and led national and international organizations, plus authored 4 books on the topic. And as a clinical psychologist and parent advocate, she has educated professionals and the public for the last 3 decades, emphasizing prevention and wellness. So thank you so much for being on our show.
It's my pleasure, Sarah. Thanks for inviting me.
I would love to know if there's anything you would want to add to your background or introduction that people should know about your work.
Well, the reason why I'm sitting here really just with such a passion after decades is it really came from my own personal experience. And certainly I can add more things to what I've done. But I think what I'd love to share is that I wasn't a professional as in a psychologist when I was launched into this career. So if it's okay with you, I'd love to have your listeners know where I came from.
Yeah, please do. Tell us.
So I had always wanted to be a mom. And, the pregnancy in my case went great. But once I delivered, I mean, immediately upon delivery, I plummeted, Sarah. I was down. I was in this. My mind was swirling with the scariest images and thoughts. And I thought, really, my life was over. And here I thought I had really wanted to do this, to become a mom. But I was in such a state of paralyzing fear, anxiety, and shame, because I thought, what is wrong with me? It was really quite a scary time. I, after a couple of months, I went to see my OB and asked him, if life is going to be like this, I don't want to be here anymore. What should I do? And he basically just laughed and said, if all new mothers go through this, Shoshana, go home and do something nice for yourself and it'll pass. And, of course, he was confusing a very serious illness, or potentially very serious illness, with normal baby blues. I did see, after a few more months of the scary, scary time of insomnia and scary images and horrible depression, suicidal depression at that point, I went to see a psychologist who had all kinds of alphabet soup after her name, and she was, she said she was a this and she was a that and she was a, okay. So I went to see her, and frankly, I felt crazier after the appointment than I did when I first walked in, because she couldn't find a childhood issue that she was searching for, and she basically made one up. I mean, she was saying the most absurd things about, you know, my toilet training. It must have been like this, and you know, my mother must have had breastfeeding problems with me. It was very Freudian, very psychoanalytic. And at that point, I swore I would never open up to another professional. There was clearly no help for me, and I really did shut down. And frankly, Sarah, I'm quite grateful that I'm still on the planet. There were a couple of really close calls where I thought my baby and husband would clearly be better off without me. My daughter, you know, I had taught rehab therapies and psychology and early childhood development and special education until then. My first master's, my first profession was as a special education instructor and taught at the community colleges in the San Francisco Bay Area. So, you know, intellectually, I knew what must be happening with my infant daughter, my beautiful daughter, who would try to engage me, you know, as babies will do, try to get my attention during this time. And bottom line, she eventually gave up. If she got any eye contact from me at all, it was a very, what we call a flat affect, expressionless. And she did grow up with an attachment disorder based on this time. Thank goodness she had a very active, hands-on father. But, you know, her daddy was gone during the day. It was just there in the evening and on the weekends. So she had an extremely depressed and anxious mother during her days. Next pregnancy, of course, you know, as I recovered when she was about 2.5, I started to see in color again, you know, instead of in shades of gray. And I started tasting my food again. And I had a thought for the first time. I thought, maybe I can be a mom. Maybe I can do this. You know, my hormones were coming back. My chemistry was coming back to normal. I know now in retrospect. So when I started feeling good, we can't imagine ever feeling bad again. You know, that's the nature of depression, and certainly postpartum depression. I had never been diagnosed and didn't know what the heck just happened to me and my family. So we got pregnant again, of course. And during the next pregnancy, for me, the pregnancy went great. Not everybody's pregnancy is good. There are just as many clinically depressed pregnant women as there are postpartum. We now know, you know, 15 to 20%, about 1 in 7 at least. So my daughter had me emotionally during that second pregnancy. But then of course I plummeted again, after her brother was born. We're at about an 80% risk for dropping into another, postpartum psychiatric illness if we've experienced one already. So she lost me again. And again, you want to talk about shame and guilt and horror, you know, because again, intellectually, I knew from my first profession what must be happening to my daughter. But I was so ill, I couldn't do anything about it to fix it. So again, there was no help at all until I was about a year into my next, you know, suicidal depression. And I saw a program. I started watching a program on television with a woman describing what I had been going through off and on for years now. And I felt two really strong emotions. One was relief that there might be a name for this, and there might be some help. But I also was full of rage. I thought, if this is so common, where were the professionals? You know, why had my family and I been allowed to suffer the way we had? So that's really what started my advocacy, and what I didn't mean to get so long-winded here, but you know, really, that's what really catapulted me into this. Still very, very depressed. I posted 2 flyers, one at my pediatrician's office and another at a local supermarket. And every week I started running support groups. 5 to 15 women would fill my my living room every week in Northern California. And I started studying everything I could get my hands on from all over the world, and realized that the U.S. was, so far behind many, many other countries in the field of maternal mental health. So it just went from there. It just went on from there, and I founded organizations that are still going strong, and eventually went back to school, and my kids were very, very young, but I studied and became a psychologist, got licensed, and have been speaking and educating mental health professionals, medical professionals, and the public so that we can prevent unnecessary suffering and be able to launch new families as healthfully as possible. So there you go. That's what brings me to this interview. And I couldn't be happier to be part of your wonderful podcast.
Mm, thank you so much for sharing your personal experience. I know that must have been a hugely traumatic thing to go through, not just for you, but for your children and your husband and frankly, everyone around you who loved you, because, you know, no one wants to see you kind of going through something, especially if that wasn't your steady state, as it were.
I became this other person. And that's what we hear, of course, from women who are suffering during pregnancy or postpartum. We become shells of our old self. I mean, where did the real self go? And I'm glad you said how it might affect the family. This is a public health issue. Postpartum depression and related disorders are not just a woman's issue. It affects everybody. It affects family members. All the relationships within the family unit are affected. Extended family, work colleagues, really everybody is affected. And that's why, again, it's so, so important to talk about this and really just sort of come out of the closet and just be real with each other. It's funny, when I started to speak to therapists, especially who are taught in school, I remember what I was taught. It's sort of like a them and an us situation. You know, there's those people who need help. And then there's, we who are doing the treating, and we're not supposed to talk about our own possible illness, especially depression and mental health stuff. And I remember, therapists would say to me, and I was so confused by this, it was so perplexing, they would say, "You're so brave to be talking about your own experience. Shoshana, do you really want to, how can you do that?" And I said, because we have to be real with each other. There isn't a them and an us. This is that we're all in this together, and no one's immune to these illnesses. And if we really want to model to our clients that no shame or embarrassment should be associated with this, if we want to blow the stigma out of the water here, we have to be real. And frankly, it didn't occur to me to be anything other than that. So, to me, it's just so important to talk about this stuff openly, and that's the only genuine way to approach it.
Mm-hmm. I couldn't agree more. Where does the stigma come from and the shame? Do people think they're weak?
Oh, I think many do. Before they learn truly what this is and what this isn't, I think a very natural way to feel, and hopefully it doesn't, but I think with the majority, it does hit them as an inadequacy, a shortcoming of some kind. The myth, of course, is that everybody else is doing fine except me. And that's, of course, not true. As we know, this is the most common complication of childbearing, as I'm sure you know. Yes, I think a very typical way to feel is there's something very weak. The woman is thinking she's weak. She's not a real mom. She's not a strong woman. She's a falling short of who she should be and what she should be able to do. And they do see it as a as a real failure. So the psychoeducation part, you know, coming as a with my clients, the first thing I'll want to do is to help them throw the myths of motherhood out the window, and also mm-hmm. let them know what this illness is and what it is not. No, it is not a weakness. Of course not. This can happen to the strongest of us, and the most loving, and the wisest, and the most intelligent. No one's immune. And if it happens, it happens. And the great news is there's a ton that we can do about it.
Mm-hmm. Myths of motherhood.
Oh yeah.
Let's talk about that.
Yeah. And you know, it's so amazing to me that in this day and year, you know, the myths of motherhood are still very much alive and well. I mean, some of them right off, I mean, there's so many of them. There are myths about how we should be able to get pregnant and stay pregnant and how, you know, how we should feel during labor and delivery and the right way. I mean, it's, you know, if you breathe the right way, you're not going to feel pain and you'll have, you know, all these myths. But, you know, the postpartum myths, some of them are, you know, breastfeeding should always be easy. After all, you know, women have been doing this for thousands of years. My relationship with my husband is suddenly going to be cemented together, and all of our problems will disappear once this baby comes. And, you know, the self-reliance myth, right? Like I should be able to do this all by myself without any support at all. And if I were a strong enough person, if I loved my kids enough, I wouldn't need any breaks. And it's all about the baby now. And I mean, there are just so many of them that are still hanging around. And often when when a woman contacts me, and I'm very, very honored to say that I have helped over 21,000 women from around the world to date help recover. Not always with one-on-one. Some have been part of groups. But it is so common that once you get rid of the myths of motherhood, some of the depression, if not most of the depression, can disappear. It's very individual. I'm not saying that's true for everyone. Sometimes it's extremely biochemical, and there's something that needs to be fixed there. It could be caused by many, many different things. But, you know, one of the pieces of the Dr. Shosh wellness plan is to help a woman with realistic expectations of motherhood. And if this can be done during pregnancy, before the event occurs and the baby comes home, I mean, all the better.
Mm-hmm. What is your wellness plan looking like? And also, I don't want to go too far. I would also want to know, if you have any thoughts on this, what would you have done differently if you knew what you know now, back when you were having your first baby?
Oh my gosh, that's a perfect segue, Sarah, to the Dr. Shosh wellness plan. because if I had known then, before having my first child, I would have taken a good look at those myths and called them just myths and fantasies. Look, I mean, some people have really easy deliveries, and they, you know, it does look that way. It unfolds that way. But I would have had a very different feeling about my birth plan, which I think we should call a wish list.
Agree.
Right? We don't know how things are going to unfold. We don't know if the size of that head of our kid's going to be like a bowling ball. I mean, we don't know the temperament of our child. We don't know if they're suddenly going to turn. I mean, we don't know anything. So we can have our wishes, but however things unfold, they unfold, you know? And I think that would have been one of the biggest things I would have worked on if I would have known what I know now, to set myself up as this is the way to deliver a kid. This is the way to, you know, sleep train our kid. This is the way to feed. And there's only one way to feed a baby, and anything else is inadequate. You know, I wouldn't have had such stringent and rigid rules for myself. I would have given myself just the, you know, that knowingness of compassion, and however it unfolds and unfolds, and it doesn't mean I've done anything wrong. So I wouldn't have set myself up for failure, first of all, and that would have changed my experience in a huge way. Would it have been enough to make me well? No. Biochemically, there were, you know, I have a long family history of OCD and depression, other things as well. So I think that I would have needed some excellent therapy. None existed back then, but I would have continued to search until I found at least somebody who was willing to learn, you know, instead of just stuffing me with a bunch of ignorance, which made things worse. So the Dr. Shosh Wellness Plan, you know, the one of the first steps is that throwing out the myths of motherhood and having realistic expectations that moms matter. And it's extremely important that mothers take care of themselves in all ways. I mean, physically, emotionally, spiritually, psychologically, they cannot allow themselves to get lost in the shuffle. Another big piece is if you have a partner, to discuss wishes and expectations with a partner before the baby comes. You know, she might be thinking, there's a lot of assuming that goes on, right? She might think, well, he's a great husband, so of course he's going to be up at nighttime, co-parenting with me, to feeding the baby and changing the baby. And he might be thinking, you know, she really likes to do things her way. And although I'd like to be part of this, I'm just going to back off and let her handle it the way she wants to. And all kinds of, you know, arguments and fights, you know, can be avoided when they're, instead of assuming, partners ask each other, you know, what they're expecting, what they like, how they feel about things, you know. So coming up with some kind of a plan of who's going to bring the food and who's going to be on duty at nighttime and where the physical support is going to come from, where the emotional support is going to come from. Those kinds of things are part of the Dr. Shosh Wellness Plan. Certainly if she's high risk, if she's had depression or any other psychiatric disorder in her family history, definitely in her personal history, it makes her higher risk. She should already be connected to a psychotherapist who specializes, and this is a specialty, not just a nice therapist, but somebody who has really studied and has the clinical expertise to help at this particular time, during the perinatal time. So I would suggest, you know, definitely at least connecting, even if you haven't already started therapy, but at least being connected with somebody who can help to monitor you. And definitely if she's on medication or she's been on it in the past, any kind of psychotropic medication, she should be connected with a practitioner who knows what's okay and not okay during pregnancy, if she's not doing well during pregnancy, who knows what's okay and not okay during, you know, to take while breastfeeding, if she chooses to breastfeed. So here's, you know, there's so many things one can do in advance to help, not guarantee, but to help at least minimize the severity of any bout of postpartum depression or related disorder, or sometimes avoid it completely.
Mm-hmm. What you're saying ties in so nicely with everything this podcast is about. So thank you for sharing that.
Oh, certainly.
I mean, I think regardless depression and historical mental illness, whatever, in the family or in personal history. I mean, the things you're talking about around preparing what to expect with your partner and your support circle and all of these considerations, I mean, they just sound like fantastic preparation and self-reflection exercises to go through in any case.
This is for everybody. You know, most of the things I mentioned are wonderful steps for every pregnant couple to take, every pregnant, you know, if they know they're high risk, being connected with a therapist or with a medical practitioner, you know, anybody can certainly do that. Especially if you know you're high risk, or definitely if you're already suffering, those two, those can be a wait and see kind of a thing, but the other things are just, they're just healthy for everybody to do. And I'm all about wellness and health. For all, because sometimes the depression is caused because some very, very basic steps weren't taken, and they can be easily remedied, but so much suffering can be avoided, you know.
And it seems like such a double blow, right? To already be feeling down in the first place, but then feel like there's some kind of judgment we're casting upon ourselves, thinking, oh, I shouldn't be feeling this way, right? That word should, which is the judgment word. Right, I should be able to do this on my own, or whatever the myth, as you called it, you know, that kicks in. It's such a double whammy.
Oh, of course, and you know, it's not fair that low self-esteem is one of the symptoms of depression. You know, I mean, it isn't for diabetes, it isn't for other things, but here it is. Not only are we depressed, but yet part of the depression is feeling bad about ourselves. You know, So there are all kinds of signs and symptoms that loved ones can look for too, you know, that we can do another podcast, or if you want to do a show in the future about how to keep the couple nice and juicy together, you know, how to keep that intimacy when the baby comes. Oh my goodness. I'll give you a great show on that too. So you just let me
great.
Know.
We will do that one next. I love it. I love it. So then what are the symptoms? Should we talk about that?
Sure. And I'll talk, you know, there, as you probably know, there are, six perinatal mood and anxiety disorders. We concentrate on postpartum depression, which I think that's what you're asking me. The signs and symptoms of postpartum depression.
Yes,
is that correct? Okay,
absolutely.
That's the one that we concentrate on the most. Because it's the disorder that happens most frequently. So it's the one in seven, at least. So what you're looking for is, there's often insomnia, difficulty sleeping at night when the baby's sleeping. So, it's most important and restorative for the brain if you can sleep at nighttime when you have a chance. If the mom can't, if she's up with her head spinning, or she gets to the point where, she just can't relax because she doesn't know when the baby's going to wake up, and she becomes sleep deprived and all that, is a real problem, and it's a serious problem, and it needs to be jumped on right away. If she finds that her appetite has shifted more than just, you know, the normal appetite increase, if she's using her milk to feed, when she's just as a when she's eating voluminous amounts of food, and not feeling satiated, you know, she's not feeling satisfied, or if she loses her appetite, which actually is more frequent, especially when there's anxiety, you know, the tummy kind of feels like it's in knots and nothing looks yummy. That's a problem. That's a problem. If she doesn't feel hungry, you're looking also for if the mom is taking the baby's behavior personally. For instance, like a client of mine not too long ago said, my baby doesn't like me. And I said, so what's the evidence for that? Why do you think that's so? And she said, well, he keeps turning his head away in the middle of a feeding session. And so she needed to be taught, first of all, that that's very normal. You know, for a baby to pull off the breast and to look away, it's not a rejection. But when we're depressed, we often take that, you know, it's the low self-esteem thing. You know, she took it personally. Or if you hear a new mommy say, my baby is rejecting my milk, or, you know, just the putting herself down based on very normal behaviors of the baby, that would be a warning sign. And, you know, sometimes women feel more anxious or angry than they do depressed. So practitioners often make the mistake of asking, very well-meaning practitioners often make the error of asking their patients, do you think you have postpartum depression? Well, you're basically asking your patient to diagnose herself. I mean, that's never a good idea, because she might be thinking, you know, postpartum depression means I want to hurt my kid. You know, you never know what she's thinking it is. So it's much better to watch for behaviors and ask about behaviors. Are you able to sleep at night when your baby sleeps? Tell me about your appetite. Do you feel hungry, or have you lost your appetite? Are you eating so much that it's very unusual for you? Just generally, do you feel like yourself is another good question. And the woman with postpartum depression won't, the gist of what she's going to feel like is, I don't know who this is, but it's not me. You know, the normal baby blues, that it's mild and should be gone by 2 weeks following delivery. If you ask a woman how she feels and she's got the baby blues, she'll say, well, I'm really tired. And yeah, sometimes I burst into tears for no reason at all. But I know, you know, it'll go away. It's just the new mommy stuff. Generally, I feel like I'm me. So she has a perspective that it's temporary. A woman with postpartum depression, what you're looking for is a woman who feels like, I think this is forever, kind of thing. She doesn't have that perspective that she'll get herself back. So those are some of the biggest. There are many, many others. Obviously, she might be crying a lot, but not necessarily. So the other thing, you know, your audience should know is that you cannot ever count on telling if a woman has postpartum depression by looking. And you always need to ask those questions. And there are certainly other things. If a mommy is having a lot of worried thoughts, if her worry goes over that line of what new moms are an anxious lot to begin with. But I mean, when the worries really start taking over her day, that's when she knows that she really should reach out for help. And that is the most loving and responsible thing she can possibly do for the well-being of her entire family, mm-hmm. is to reach out to the right kind of help, to a psychotherapist who specializes in this particular area. You know, many of my colleagues, like I, work virtually. So we work with women who live anywhere. And so there's always, I just was helping a woman in Pakistan the other day. I mean, you know, my clients are all over the world, or those who consult with me, and there are others. Some of my colleagues do the same. So to know that now there is help literally for you, no matter where you live. And that is the best thing you can do, not only for yourself, but for everybody else you love, is to get that help as soon as possible. Prognosis in general is best the sooner that you find proper help, not just help, but the right kind of help.
Hi, listeners. I have some exciting news to share with you today. We've partnered with Every Mother, your go-to destination for evidence-based exercise therapy regimens. Whether you're dealing with diastasis recti, preparing for birth, or navigating postpartum recovery, Every Mother has your back. With personalized daily routines tailored to your core and pelvic floor needs, they're here to support you every step of the way. Say hello to a stronger, healthier you with Every Mother. Visit their website today and use code FOURTHTRIMESTER10 for 10% off your personalized regimen. That's fourth spelled out, FOURTH, trimester10 for 10% off, because every mother deserves the very best.
What about for someone who's just not sure? They think, I can't tell if I'm having these symptoms.
Yes. And so you reach out and you find out. I mean, one of the things I love to do from women when I get those calls is, you know, I don't know if this is normal or not. I'm not sure. First thing I'll say is bravo for reaching out to find out. Sometimes I can normalize what they're going through. It sounds much more like blues, but what I'll say to her, after asking her a bunch of questions and listening very carefully to how she responds, I'll say if the same feelings that you're having now within the first week, you know, or maybe it's her second week postpartum, if it continues, call me back, because there's a whole lot we can do to help you feel good. And of course, I'll give her support. Look, all new parents need support. right? So I'll always, no matter what, even if it sounds like the baby blues, I'll give her suggestions as to what to do. Like the Dr. Shosh wellness plan, that's for everybody, right? I'll make sure she's having good physical support. She's getting regular breaks. She's, you know, eating well. She's, you know, she's got good emotional support, somebody she can lean on and be real with. But I'll let her know. Just let, if it continues past the couple of week mark, to get in touch with me, and we'll get more aggressive with suggestions. But in, that was a long-winded way of answering your question. Always, there's never a reason not to reach out to find out whether it's normal or not. But again, I can't stress strongly enough that you want to reach out to somebody who knows mm-hmm. what they're talking about here, so that something that's potentially serious isn't normalized, or that they don't make an issue, right, out of something that is very normal. So either way, you want to talk to somebody in the know, who knows mm-hmm. what it is and knows what it isn't.
And it sounds like it's best for baby. And anyone who's oriented around the, I just want to do what's best for my baby. I mm-hmm. mean, what a great thing to do, to reach out to someone and just kind of tick that box. Like, yep, I've been sort of cleared, so to speak. And maybe I want to check in again in 6 months or a year.
And doesn't that make sense, right? We get everything else checked. We get our incisions checked. If we have incisions, we have, you know, we have our lactation consult, you know, we're checking all kinds of other things for physical milestones and making sure we're healing and doing well. Mm-hmm. We're not driving until we get the go ahead. Doesn't it make sense to check in and make sure that mental health is on track?
Yeah. And what happens? Like, what difference does it make for the child if they have a parent who's sort of less stable, so to speak, versus someone who has, you know, they're suffering from mental health issues that aren't getting support?
Oh, Sarah, you know, by the way, I wrote a book just right on that topic, Children of the Depressed. So we have a plethora of data showing the consequences to untreated maternal depression. And we actually know a lot about how the father's depression or partner's depression can affect children too. Again, this is a public health issue. Children are much more likely for depression themselves, for neurological issues, for developmental issues of all kinds, behavioral problems. I mean, we know that. So again, this isn't to scare anybody. The take-home message is, you know, parents need to be well, and so children will be well. So concentrate on your own wellness all the way around. And your kids, you know, are going to be in much, much better shape. So use yourself. You're the project. You know, I always tell mommies, you know, they call me worried about their kids, right? Or their child. I don't want my depression to rub off on them. I don't want to. And I will certainly give them very practical ways that they can make sure. One of the reasons why I've got such a passion and for doing this work is also to watch out for the kids. I mean, as I told you, my firstborn developed an attachment disorder. She's fine now. It took years to put us back together again. But I will give her very strategic methods to make sure that her depression doesn't affect your child. But I will tell her that, you know, concentrate on your wellness rather than worrying about this and that. You know, you becoming the healthiest mommy you can possibly be is the biggest gift to your child. So make you the project.
Mm-hmm. Is that about being an example for your children?
Oh, sure. The modeling. I think it models wonderful things when you get help for yourself, when things don't feel like they're going well, whether they can cognitively understand it or not. You know, being a baby, maybe they're older kids, you know, they're still modeling. They're still modeling. And they should feel wonderful about that. Wonderful mm-hmm. about that. But also, the healthier they are, their behavior can also change. They'll have the wherewithal to take care of their children the way they really want to.
Yeah. when I was pregnant, my body felt different. My mind felt different. Yeah. I was having all kinds of like interesting things going on with me. Some were positive. Like I suddenly started not feeling carsick. Wow. That was a superpower that disappeared after I had my baby. But that was awesome. Uh-huh. Yeah. They could be positive and negative. And I think in a time period of so much fluctuation and change for mm-hmm. anyone within their body and their mind, I imagine that makes it really tough to recognize signs of depression. And it sounds like, I mean, if one in 20, or you said one in five, mm-hmm. 20% of mm-hmm. people are experiencing some kind of depression. There's so many different types during pregnancy and postpartum. I mean, it must be really tough to diagnose some of that stuff.
You know, yeah. I mean, generally during pregnancy, there should be weight gain. Right? Yeah. Generally, she should be looking forward to what's to come. Yeah, there can be some worries about labor and delivery or what kind of a mom am I going to be? But generally, hopefully she's looking forward. Generally she can sleep. You know, I mean, until especially towards the end when she's, maybe a little bit bigger and peeing more frequently and stuff. But, you know, there are often during pregnancy, let me just give you, I'm going to give you an example of something that shouldn't happen, but it does frequently. A woman I worked with a while back at 8 months pregnant went to her OB's office for a check. And the nurse, very nice nurse, asked her, is there anything going on that she should know about? And so what the woman said, this woman who later became my client, she said, well, I'm not sleeping very well anymore. And the nurse started to laugh and said, well, of course you're not sleeping well. You're 8 months pregnant. And that was the end of the discussion. There was nothing that came after that. Now, had the nurse asked one simple question, why? Why do you feel you're not sleeping? Why do you think you're not sleeping well? What she would have heard was, well, I've got, you know, physically I'm doing okay. A little bit of heartburn and yeah, I'm up using the bathroom more frequently, but you know, generally physically I'm okay. But I just found out I'm having a girl and I was molested as a child. And I am deathly afraid that the same thing is going to happen to my baby. And my head is just spinning with so many worries. I can't sleep. You see, and what happened with this woman is that she went through the rest of her pregnancy just having horrible, you know, nightmares about things. And she was up and just, you know, she was a mess. And it was only about 3 months postpartum that she was finally given a referral. And I started working with her. She's now, you know, totally fine. But all of those months and launching into new parenthood, not sleeping, completely fraught with worry, having, you know, PTSD from what happened to her as a child, you know, all that unnecessary suffering could have been avoided with why, and then a good referral.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
right. Understanding that there's some differences that, okay, sure. Yeah. You're pregnant. So sleeping is tougher. Like that's definitely
right.
True.
Right.
But why? Yeah, what a great question.
Very simple. Very, very simple. I was thinking of that when you were talking about pregnancy and knowing what's abnormal from knowing what's normal. I mean, like pregnant women might have some worries that come in and out, but nothing that should take over their day or their night. You know, if a symptom is really affecting functioning like that, one shouldn't wait. One shouldn't just normalize it. One should at least ask a professional in the know, you know, here's what's going on. Is this normal stuff? Is there anything I should be doing about this? Will it go away on its own? You don't have to try to figure that out yourself. We are trained to be able to help you with that.
Yeah. And I just wanted to ask you, just changing the subject ever so slightly. I have read instances and like heard of instances of women sort of temporarily going on medication and then coming back off. And I mean, is there anything wrong with that? Especially if it's just maybe during this time period?
Are you talking about pregnancy or
during
postpartum?
Pregnancy or postpartum? Yeah.
Either one. The answer is yeah. I don't mean to push my wares, but I was asked to write pregnant on Prozac because there's so much hype out there. You know, there's horrible stuff that the so-called research that's not, you know, just so many holes in that research. I hate even to call it research. Yeah, we know enough at this point to know that antidepressants are, and again, I don't give medical advice. You know, I don't. I'm a PhD, not an MD. But we do know enough. If you ask any researcher who does the excellent kind of real research, or practitioners, you know, MDs, psychiatrists who specialize in this particular field, they'll tell you, you know, that yes, you can certainly go on medication, antidepressants, and some others during pregnancy and postpartum, and if that's what the woman actually needs in order to be well, that's precisely what she should do, because there's some real danger to not getting treated if it's medication that you truly need. Now, that being said, often medication is not needed. A full assessment should be given. Like the best doctors I work with will say, Sarah, they'll say to their patients, I'm ready to prescribe you something. You know, you're going to be fine if you need to take it. And if you do, that's absolutely fine. But first get a complete assessment with Dr. Shosh, you know, one of my colleagues, and to see whether you even need it. Because sometimes a basic wellness strategy is all they need without the medication. You talk about exercise and specifics with nutrition and emotional support, physical support, sleep, you know, and she's off and running. But if she does need a medication, yes, in answer to your question, often what happens if she, especially if she doesn't have a long history with depression, these are acute disorders. You take the medication for as long as you need it, and then a few months more, and then you're slowly weaned off, and you just go on with your married life, and you're fine. So another myth, you know, it works as a barrier to many women even reaching out for help, because they're thinking, I'll be stuck on a medication and that means I'll be on it forever. And no, that is typically not true. Again, unless she has a long history and she's always been on medication, typically she's on it for as long as she needs it and then she's weaned off.
And what do you think is better for baby? Kind of just going through the depression and not introducing any drugs to the system, especially while pregnant, right? Because they're, I'll just leave it at that. Or taking the drugs. And I guess the other part of that question is, what are the risks that someone kind of exposes the baby to if they let a depression go unchecked during pregnancy?
And again, this is why a woman wants to work with somebody with the clinical expertise to be able to not only give them the data about, you know, so that they can make a really good choice for themselves, but part of that data is knowing that pregnancy crosses, excuse me, the depression itself can affect the baby in negative ways. It crosses the placenta. It actually changes the uterine environment in ways that we think could be damaging, we know from very good research. So look, I am no lover of big pharma. I need to tell you, I think, you know, natural whenever possible. And you know, who wants to take an antidepressant if they don't need to? But from everything we know to date, you know, if you were to ask the really excellent researchers who do fabulous work, the independent researchers and also the psychiatrists and other medical practitioners who truly specialize in following this particular area, they would say, they'd agree with me. They'd say that if she truly needs the medication in order to be well, it is better to take it than not to take it. And it will be much better for all concerned. I mean, the risks can be much more if you don't take a medication. Might she be able to use alternative medications? Yes. Or take just a smaller amount of the medication along with some alternative or complementary natural treatments. Yeah. I mean, again, there's no cookie cutter approach to treatment. I mean, every woman who contacts me has a different set of circumstances and different chemistry and what she's willing to do, what she's not willing to do. You know, it needs to be individualized, but there are definitely some alternative treatments or complementary treatments that can be used along with medication that can help the woman to 100%. But we're going for wellness. Wellness is important. You know, if she's depressed during pregnancy, she's not taking care of herself. In utero, there could be problems. She's usually not eating well. She's not sleeping well. She might not even show up to her prenatal visits. I mean, it's not good for anybody, including the unborn.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, I mean, it's better for mom, kind of following on from what you were saying earlier, like, you know, mom putting mom first actually results in much better
for everybody.
Results for the baby.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Health-wise, too. I mean, there's all kinds of risks.
That's right.
Okay. You mentioned natural preventative treatments. What are those?
Well, some of the alternative treatments we know, and again, what works for one might not work for the next. I mean, the best treatment for each woman is the one that works, you know, mm-hmm. as long as it's safe, right? So, I mean, the neurobiofeedback is used. You know, there is magnetic stimulation, transcranial magnetic stimulation, the TMS. Acupuncture has been shown to be, you know, certainly very relaxing, good for anxiety, and some depression. Light therapies we have some data with a couple of different kinds of light therapies, the light box kind of therapy. And also, there's a website called Low Blue Lights, LOWBLUELIGHTS .com. And they have the best lenses that can actually help melatonin start flowing. You put them on like 2 or 3 hours before you go to bed, and they're pretty amazing, you know, natural, very non-invasive therapy. So there are a number. Massage is now coming out in the data for having some benefit, at least for general well-being. Omega-3 fish oil. We have data about the preventive aspects of taking omega-3 fish oil as well as treatment, not as an alternative treatment, not instead of medication necessarily, but certainly as a complement, and it can definitely help. We have the most data from omega-3 fish oil than we do any other complementary or alternative treatment, as a matter of fact. So there are a number of treatments emerging in the research with some really good information behind it. And we're getting more and more all the time.
Mm. I always get a lovely endorphin kick from working out. And yeah. I know there's so, oh, I mean, that's a whole other topic. Another one.
Sure. Right? But that's that should be part of the wellness strategy. If you know, the exercise, the physical support, the emotional support, you know, the breaks, the myths, throwing the myths and fantasies out the window, you know, the talking about expectations that are realistic, you know, all of that should be part of the basic wellness strategy. So hopefully the exercise is there no matter what, you know, but these are things that you can add, you know, it could be in addition not only trying to help you prevent a depression, or an anxiety situation, but also to help treat. But exercise, you definitely want to get in some kind of exercise for your mental health, not just your physical health.
Right. Absolutely. So you've mentioned a couple of your books. Let's maybe kind of go through those. What are the resources you might recommend for parents? Obviously, we have no relationship here other than having you as a guest on our show, just for like full disclosure. This is not a sponsorship thing at all. But
right.
Like, what resources do you recommend? We've had Jane Hodickman on recently recommending PSI and the Institute, but sounds like you would second those.
I absolutely would. I think going to postpartum.net is an excellent way to start and plug in and find resources that you need. And she talked about the Postpartum Action Institute. And that's not just for professionals, you know, as in psychotherapists and medical professionals. That's for anybody. Anybody who is interested in learning more or coming with your advocacy. What we do is help to channel that will to just help communities and help new parents. You know, we can help to launch you if you'd like in very, very different areas. So, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't. Well, I'll give you the name of a film. I mean, Dark Side of the Full Moon. If you go to, it's all spelled out, darksideofthefullmoon.com, you'll see a documentary. It is not meant for anybody who is suffering. Please be careful. If you are suffering with depression perinatally, take good care of yourself when you're watching this film, because it is very explicit. It's talking about the barriers to getting treatment in the U.S. if you're suffering. It was the first documentary of its kind. It's really quite a powerful film, and it's launching all sorts of educational programs, hospital programs all through the country. It's really created quite a ripple effect. Tidal wave, not even ripples at this point. And so I did want to mention that also as a very, very good resource to learning more about the effects of untreated, you know, when a woman does not get the help that she needs. Although I will tell you that the film ends on a very, very hopeful, upbeat note. So, yeah.
Well, thank you so much. And also everyone who's listening, please go check out Dr. Shosh's website, which is drshosh.com. And her books will list everything on the Fourth Trimester Podcast site as well. So you
and
can click
if I may
and
spell it, because Shosh isn't always easy. Can I go ahead and
please
spell
do.
It?
Yeah, please
yeah,
do.
Yeah, it's drshosh, like the beginning of Shoshana. So drshosh.com. And yes, I'd be so happy if anybody has follow-up questions to this podcast. And I thank you again, Sarah, very, very much for this opportunity. If anyone has any questions or comments or, would like help in any way or any kind of resource, even if I haven't mentioned it, they're just curious about something, please, please get in touch. There are all kinds of ways to reach me on my site. So I look forward. I would look forward to hearing from any of your wonderful listeners.
Well, thank you so much. And we'll have you back very, very soon.
I look forward to that, Sarah. Thank you again.
You can find out more about Esther Gallagher on esthergallagher.com. You can also subscribe to this podcast in order to hear more from us. Thank you for listening, everyone, and I hope you'll join us next time on the Fourth Trimester. The theme music on this podcast was created by Sean Trott. Hear more at soundcloud.com/SeanTrott. Special thanks to my true loves, my husband Ben, daughter Penelope, and baby girl Evelyn. Don't forget to share the Fourth Trimester podcast with any new and expecting parents. I'm Sarah Trott. Goodbye for now.
Hello again, Bicycle Man. I know you're doing all that you can. I wrote the song, simple and true. I wrote the song, I'll sing a song for you. You got your wheels, you got your gears. You ride around town without any fear. You got your pedals, you got your brakes. You always wear your helmet for safety's sake. Hello again, Bicycle Man. I know you're doing all that you can.
I wrote the song, simple and true. I wrote the song, I sing a song for you. Hello again, bicycle man. I know you're doing the best that you can. I wrote the song, simple and true. I wrote the song, I sing a song for you.